So thank you everybody who is online joining us today, and welcome to our Inkona's sixth webinar of this year. I can't believe the year has gone so quickly. It's just exactly 2 weeks, 2 days until I'm on holiday. Not that I'm counting or anything at all. What an awesome year and busy year it's been at Inkona. One of the people we like to keep busy, and we do so to keep him out of trouble for his own good, is our dear founder and chairman of the board, Hans Trunkenpols. Hans, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, hello Taryn, and hello everybody out there. So I hope, thanks for the invite, and I hope I can contribute a little bit and clarify a couple of topics of the subject of today.
Awesome. And I believe you're dialing in from France today.
I left France already. I'm back in Germany now.
Oh, you're back in Germany. I don't even ask where you are these days anymore. I just want to know when you're in town so we can say hello. So Hans, thank you for joining in this this topic. It comes up, we decide on our webinar topics based on the questions we're asked, our FAQs. So in along with those top 10 FAQs this year was, how do we effectively audit customer specific requirements? When it comes to auditing, I don't only have one IATF auditor with me today in Hans, I've got a second IATF auditor, so I'm completely outnumbered by you guys. Welcome Andras Sabo. Thank you very much for joining us. Andras is also 14 years, I believe, you've been an IATF auditor. And now you're the next level, actually a witness auditor, auditing the auditors. Andras is the owner and MD of QFD, based in Budapest in Hungary. QFD and Inkona are similar organizations in that we are both VDA QMC licensed partners. But after so many years, Hans and Andras couldn't help but make friends and forget about the competitive spirit. And all kidding aside, we actually offer a lot of complimentary services. So that is why Andras has joined us. I'm excited for you to share some examples of something you might have that really helps with today's topic.
Yeah, I will. Hello, everyone. And Taryn, Hans, thank you very much for the opportunity being here today. And for everyone, enjoy the workshop.
Awesome. Andras is also busy traveling right now. I believe you're sitting at Berlin Airport for a few hours.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Thank you very much for making the time anyway between meetings and traveling. Okay. So, Hans, when we discussed doing this particular topic, straight up, you said to me, you're not surprised at all that this has come into the top questions. What makes auditing customer-specific requirements such a challenge?
Taryn, I think the number one reason that I would like to bring forward is that there are just simply too many. It's an organization that has to deal with customer-specific requirements must be truly overwhelmed. And not to forget that we have many companies out there in the industry that not only serve one particular OEM, but a variety of different ones. And the bigger the organizations get up to the corporate levels, they're dealing with multiple OEMs. So which doesn't make that topic easier. There's general too many customer specific requirements that need attention. Another reason I would like to say is that the customer specific requirements rollout process in organization is in many, if not in most of the cases, not very effective. Mm-hmm. Basically means that the customer-specific requirements are not well known in the various departments and areas where they're actually supposed to be applied to. And that list would go on and on and on. I could actually fill the whole hour of webinar giving reasons as to why it's very tricky and very complicated at this point in time to get in real control of such CSRs. Also for a reason that the majority of those requirements, as ITF says, have not been incorporated into the scope of the management system. So there's quite a variety of reasons that need to be brought forward, and for that reason, no, I'm truly not surprised at all that it has made it into the top 10 list of yours. Not at all.
So Hans, forgive me, but as you know, I'm nowhere near a subject matter expert on this. I'm a marketing manager, but I certainly in a couple of years have picked up certain elements about the automotive industry and standards. And what I don't get is we've got IATF 16949. So this is the baseline that regulates the minimum requirements of automotive and component manufacturers. So are the CSRs incorporated into the IATF 16949 standard, or how does this squat work, or are there requirements in IATF to do with CSRs?
Yeah, no, look, Taryn, it's fairly simple. If we would incorporate each and every customer-specific requirement of every OEM around the world, and by the way, not only OEMs, because tier one suppliers, big corporates also have supply customer specific requirements. If we would incorporate all of that in the ITF book, well, then happy days. That thing would have probably 13,000 pages and it would be a complete mess. But of course, ITF did refer to the requirements of the customer. And it is indeed an ITF requirement to comply to those. Yeah. But it has been brought forward, and I can show you a little bit of a presentation together here. What are the relevant requirements with regards to these CSRs, if I might call it that? And it starts with a very banal formulation stipulation under this clause 4.3.2, where IATF does refer specifically to those requirements and says that the organization should evaluate. I think that is something that needs to be discussed. What does it mean to evaluate? And then also to include them into the scope of an organization or in the organizational quality management system. And generally we speak about a CSR rollout process. And that starts apparently at the beginning with gathering the relevant CSRs, depending on what customer, OEM or tier one supplier you are dealing with. And then apparently somebody's got to read that, okay? And by reading that one by one, one should identify as to in which department or area that particular CSR should be followed. And that in an ideal world takes place together with the process owners. We have so many process owners according to ITF, and we had a webinar about the process ownership and taking ownership of a process. Elsewise, I don't see a chance how this could ever fly if we give it up to the quality guys and the quality system guys to do it for the whole organization. So that is a mission impossible. But and I'm sure Andres would copy that. Is what we get to see out there is that this complete rollout process of CSRs. Companies are struggling with. So as you can see in this 4.3.2, it's a very generic statement down the line, basically what it means, follow the CSR, period. That's what it's all about. There's another requirement in the book, and I think this is quite important, where it particularly refers to this quality management system documentation, because as like in 432, integrating the CSRs in the scope, what is the scope of the quality management system? Basically, it's revolving around a quality system documentation, which starts somewhere with a quality manual, and then you have procedures, and then you have work instructions and policies. So the total amount of system documentation determines also the scope of the management system. And now consequently, what the standard says is incorporate the CSRs in the scope, meaning basically in which process or in which procedure or in which work instruction are you actually addressing and taking care of these customer specific requirements. And there is this beautiful matrix that the book also refers to, where it says where in the organization's quality management system, basically our quality management systems now are identified in certain areas and processes that use particular process descriptions. And where in those areas do you find or where do you address those customer requirements? And this is where the books ask for example, for this beautiful matrix that we get to see out there, which is often a little bit questionable, because most of the times that I get to see it's referred to an ITF clause. So which ITF clause contains which CSR, which doesn't really make much sense. So it has to be related to the process where the particular requirement is addressed. Okay. Then we have more references also with regards to the competency. Auditing in general, customer specific requirements requires a competence of the auditors, not in and around the ISO 9001 and ITF requirements, but of course also those particular CSR, right? Because how else could you effectively audit a system or a manufacturing process? Because the same thing applies for process auditing. If you are not on top of the game about the content of these CSRs. So the internal auditors must be competent. The second party auditors, when you go out to the suppliers, needless to mention, of course, as well. I have to say, within the system audit, which are predominantly conducted internally, there is many more CSR applicable than in the process, manufacturing process. Not that they wouldn't be applicable, but they're just not asked for. So by far the biggest amount of CSRs are to be audited during the system audits that you mainly conduct internally. In the process audits, also a variety of them, but by far not as many.
Okay.
And then we have, in the quality system audits, that's basically the general requirement for all of you out there, where it says that you need to conduct over a period of 3 years the whole management system in terms of an internal system audit to verify whether or not those international requirements and the CSRs, particularly mentioned, and the CSRs are effectively implemented within the organization. So that is the basic requirement as to why we do this here today, simply because it's an ITF requirement. And honestly, from what we get to see out there, it's just often difficult to trace back where in the organization have CSRs been addressed by the auditor, because you just simply cannot see a reference from the planning, from the audit report, from the records. There's just not enough links that would give us a good to say, no, systematically CSRs have been addressed in a variety of different processes. Mm-hmm. So that is something we need to be aware of. And then the same thing in the manufacturing process. For example, the VDA 6.3 audit is a particular customer specific requirement. And that in connection with the manufacturing process audit as per the IATF, where it says you have to have that customer specific required approach, which in particular would be the VDA 6.3 for the German OEMs, for argument's sake. But other OEMs we see coming forward and recognizing VDA 6.3. So if you have a look at this slide over and old, and to answer your question, yes, CSRs are, of course, clearly stipulated in the IATF framework, okay? But starting from 4.3.2, very generically, okay? Yeah. But throughout the chapters, as you can see, in chapter 4, 7, and 9, again and again, IATF does talk about specific CSRs approaches and telling us to comply.
Yeah, it's clearly there. I don't know, Hans, a few of these feel a bit more obvious to me, so to speak. But I'm wondering, you were mentioning matrices, et cetera. So around point two, can you maybe elaborate what it means, CSR to be incorporated within the scope of the QMS, sorry?
Yeah, sure. If you still stick to this slide here, this will be part number two, that 7511, where you can clearly see, and once again, I did elaborate on that as well already, is the challenge is how do we incorporate specific CSRs, not references to books, okay, but specific requirements into the management system. Basically means this matrix should tell me which particular CSR is addressed in which process description or procedure in order to get the reference to one another. And I have prepared also a couple of examples if you want to go through this. If you have a look, and this is this particular matrix, how it could look like. And of course, in a digital world, you can also use databases. And that's why I also railed my good old friend Andras in, because he has a fantastic software database. And I'm sure you're going to like this. First, we need to understand the principle of it. On the left-hand side at QMS, you basically see the structure of all system documents as they are applicable for the organization. Mm-hmm. The process level and then breaking it down to procedures. And in this particular case, where you can see in that management process or procedure number one, where this company had a management review, which I basically agree with, because management review should be looked at as a process and not necessarily as an activity. And we're always talking about CSR in the manufacturing process and in project management. But Ford, for argument's sake, has a very particular CSR that's related around their Q1 award. So every one of you out there that is in possession of a Ford Q1, congratulations, first of all. Secondly, this will be a particular CSR that tells you that it has to be used as an input, because you have to do those reviews about the Q1 self-audits and audits, and the results thereof should be now also used as an input into the management review. And this particular procedure, you can see now where this organization has addressed exactly that particular CSR. Mm-hmm. So we are not referring here to the Ford Motor Company CSRs, you know, effective date 2022. We're not referring to a book. We have to go into the book, get the specific CSR out and then refer and help yourself to understand as to in which procedure and which process we are actually addressing that. And that, of course, later, and this is the logic of it, will then be your required and vital input for your audit planning, specifically for the CSR. So it wouldn't do any good to refer here just the name of the book or the document, but a very specific requirement out of the book, and let's see in which procedure we're going to address that, basically. And I've got a couple of them. Tesla, some new requirements also. So you can see that RCMP process, which is a very particular Tesla compliance requirement. This particular company has addressed that now in the so-called MP3, which deals with governments and governance and compliance. All right. So again here, not a reference to the supplier handbook here, but to a very particular CSRs, as you can see it here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a one for BMW, BMW like other OEMs as well. Of course, particularly ask for that PSCR. It's also another BDA training that we all offer here if someone needs assistance. And this has also been incorporated or addressed in that same one and the same governance and compliance regulation and procedure. And you can go through and through and through. And as you can see, it's already quite a bit. Volkswagen as the second biggest OEM in the world, of course, has big booklets. Not only this formal Q concrete, there's formal Q capability, there's a QPNI. There's a variety of different books already in the Volkswagen world. But this particular one that always causes trouble out in the industry, many still use the APQP approach for projects. Many companies have their own internal project management structure and regulation, and this Volkswagen, like other German OEMs also, require that VDA RGA, or that would be the German expression, or MLA for majority level assurance, which is a very powerful tool if both parties share the same interest in doing this together on a mutual basis. And not only to be pushed into the supplier side from their side, but if it's done on both sides, an extremely powerful methodology to bring new projects over the finish line for a safe launch condition. And consequently, this particular requirement has been in this organization implemented or addressed in the new product implementation procedure, where there is the reference to this particular VDA, RGA, or MLA approach, which can be seen then in chapter 3.1 in that formal Q concrete guideline of the Volkswagen Group, and is also applicable for every brand within the Volkswagen Group as well. So that's quite an important CSR. General Motors, for the ones of you that deal with GM, and this everlasting problem with special characteristics and what symbols we're going to use, and do we have to use the for each and every OEM that we deal with their ones, or can we use a common one? This is a never-ending discussion out there. However, if you don't come to an agreement with the OEM to use a standardized symbolic, then simply this GMW 15049 procedure applies, where they have their own SCs and CCs mentioned, And according to IATF, you shall use those unless not otherwise agreed with the customer. So consequently, this CSR has been incorporated here in a procedure where they deal with the SC and CC management, which makes sense from my side totally. And then it goes on. Daimler has, for argument's sake, and this is where I'm just coming back from France, doing a VDA 2 audit that's causing currently a lot of turbulences out there with this new approach, the latest approach. Seems like the German OEMs are now waking up and demanding more and more the new VDA 2, which has a complete different sequence than the PPAP approach. Anyway, very interesting topic. There's a lot of fruitful ideas in this booklet. Again, if it's taken seriously on both sides. And this has been incorporated in the PPAP procedure of this organization. So you can see, and I think I have one last one prepared here for you. Also a fairly new one that revolves around the reverse FMEA. Okay. An extremely powerful methodology, but it's not a standalone methodology per se. It's really gearing up, and in the sense of the word, of a reverse FMEA, because your standard FMEAs you draw up in a very early stage of the development, if I may call it that. But and the teams make the best assessment for severities, occurrence, and detection at their best abilities in an early stage. However, once the lines, once the equipment is industrialized and the validation process starts, you learn more and more and more about process and product. And this reverse FMEA is basically made to go back and see whether your previous ratings of occurrence and detection was accurate or if it takes any changes. It's quite a powerful application of the standard PFMEA, I should say. It's not a standalone, which is required now by Stellantis, or specifically the ex-PSA. You got to be very careful with CSAs of Stellantis, guys. Stellantis is not a car, is not an OEM per se. It's an investment group that owns different brands that they bought, like PSA, like Opel, like Fiat Chrysler. That all belongs to the Stellantis group. But Stellantis per se is not a car brand. So you always need to be careful as to which car brand is actually referred to, because you can make a business with Stellantis, which is actually Opel, or you can make a business with Stellantis, which is PSA, or Citroën, or Peugeot, or also with Fiat, or also with Chrysler. So got to be very careful. They are currently working on consolidating that. But as we speak, we have still the car brands specific CSRs in place. So that is what ITF requires from the organization to basically do. If it is a matrix, if it's a database, if it is a BPM, a business process modeling software, this is what Andras is gonna show you. A beautiful idea to assist also an auditor. Elsewise, these lists are wallpapers. So you need to have some digital support. Is an extremely important input into your audit planning. And remember, what we always get to see is when you want to demonstrate to an auditor that you are addressing CSRs, and that's the crucial point, you also need to provide in a documented way that allows an auditor to see that really a CSR has been addressed. If you don't make any reference in the audit report, in the audit plan, in your non-conformity report, if you're too generic, Okay. And the auditor cannot pick up any keywords that allows him to understand, okay, a specific CSR of this and that OEM has been addressed. He will have a lot of grounds to issue a nonconformity, and rightfully so. Okay. Baron?
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. I would imagine if you don't have a matrix system such as this, whatever platform it is on, it might be quite a beast to set up in the first place, but maintaining it from there is reasonable. Good way of also crossover.
Yeah, Taryn, it's a beast. It's a beast from start to end in any case. Firstly, because the amount and the variety of different CSRs is just completely overwhelming. And secondly, as you rightfully say, to maintain such a matrix is another exercise in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, again, saying who's taking ownership of specific CSRs in the management system. And as long as we have that situation, folks out there, that we leave the responsibility to the quality guys, to the quality managers, to the quality system representatives. As long as we are in that situation, which we still are in the majority of the cases, simply because the process owners are not coming forward and taking ownership. As long as we have that situation that the quality guys must do spoon feeding and babysitting for the organization during audits, when maybe a customer audit or a third party audit, as long that situation occurs, nothing, you will not be able, it will not fly. You cannot effectively audit customer specific requirements. And then it comes to the bang when the OEM comes himself and picks up. Everybody that's listening today, just look into your audit reports. When your customers come, or even ITF auditors, how many findings we basically generating that's revolving around customer specific requirements that they feel have not been effectively implemented. And it is so unnecessary. It is so unnecessary. But it's not going to fly as long as the process owners feel too comfortable that the quality managers are around. Consequently, they run with the auditors 24/7 just to spoon feed and babysit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the situation that we see up there again and again and again.
So how would you say that this matrix can be used to plan single events?
Yeah, now look, coming back to the previous slide where we already looked at that we have to do those system audits internally and manufacturing process audits in any case. And that is linked also with a reference to the ISO 19011. So if you have to look into the 19011, that will clearly tell you that you have not only have to plan those audits on an annual basis, you also have to plan the single events. And if you plan a single event that lasts for 2 days or 3 days, you clearly need to have a reference already there what kind of CSRs you're actually intending or planning to address. And that would look then something like this, where you can then have, I mean, everybody of you is using some sort of an audit plan for the single events, where you can see as to who is the auditor and when is he coming and what process is audited in the morning and which ones in the afternoon. And this is just an extract of an audit plan where you can see, for argument's sake, in the management processes, what kind of processes you really intend to address and what are the relevant CSRs that come with. Okay. So these are the planned CSRs that you intend to address when going through the standard MP1 to MP3 of this particular organization. or hear very important in development process, design processes. In particular cases, how do you identify those GM special characteristics? And most importantly, project management. Yeah? This is where we have the biggest issues right now, is not applying fully to those VDA, RGA, or MLA approaches. So you want to be very clear here as to which CSRs you intend to address in which process. And that is hugely important, because you don't want to address the same CSRs event by event by event, because there's too many, but you can only take a specific sample size per event. So you need to have a traceability for yourself as to which CSRs you have addressed in the previous event, so that you bring new ones in the follow-up event, okay? Elsewise, you just always auditing the ones that you know by heart, where you have the experiences. But the book of CSRs is a lot bigger, that we are not always having the knowledge present and the content present. So that gives you the systematic approach. You can only be effective in CSR auditing when you use a systemic approach. If you just audit the ones that you have in your biological C drive by your experiences, which is a good thing, but it's only a fraction of. So if you want to effectively go through a 3 years period, you want to have the maximum amount of the most critical ones. You're never going to touch all of them. I can pull you that tooth. That's a mission impossible. But the ones that are permanently critical and always on the plate and always addressed by the customer themselves, you want to have a variety of CSR covered through a three-year cycle. And consequently, if you lose track in the audit plan, in the audit report, because there is no reference made to particular CSR, then you will find it difficult and you will always do the same ones that you know. So, and this traceability has to go through, basically starting from your reference matrix, if you want to call it that, you carry them forward into your audit plan. And then according to the audit plan, you conduct your single events where you make your records, ideally on tablets already today, but also the good old way of notepads and pens is still sufficient and present, as we can see. But through the records, all the way into the report, you need to have that reference, because elsewise you are not able to tell the auditors that, well, I can see you have planned them here, but you're making zero reference in your report. So it's difficult for you to prove to me that you have done what you have planned, if that makes sense. So that traceability of references to the CSR must be kept up all the way through the systemic workflow in those audit documents, starting from the reference matrix, the CSR matrix that you make use of for your audit planning. And then through your records and your audit report, you need to see evidence that these CSRs have been addressed. So how do you do that? I prepared a couple of samples here. This was an extract from a VDA 6.3 audit report. And I'm not going to go through each and every one. This is basically for project management. Always important, guys. ASP 19011, this is nearly systematically missing in every organization I get to see. You have to, when you stipulate a nonconformity, there's three information you have to provide. One is the systemic finding. Second is the reference to the clause that you find was violated. And thirdly, the most important one for the auditee is the objective evidence. So systemic finding, objective evidence, and reference to the clause are extremely important, and we never get to see this. Here is an objective evidence. You can clearly see the reference to a Volkswagen Group specific requirements that was felt was not in order. Consequently, the auditor assessed that with a low rating. There you can already see the reference that a CSR has been addressed as stipulated in the audit. And there's another one for General Motors. And I don't want to read this for you. Just go read through for yourself. It's extremely important under the area of objective evidence that you give the auditee as much and as sufficient information as possible so that he can go back exactly to that case once the auditor left and can see for himself and review for himself actually what went wrong. Give him enough and sufficient information and also make clear references to the OEM CSR that has been addressed in particular areas. There's another one in the area of 4.1, yeah, FMEAs, a typical nonconformity. I cannot see all the faces out there, but I can sense that everybody's putting a smile in his face. This FMEA is a standard nonconformity, nearly. And in this particular area, it has been observed that exactly that reverse FMEA approach, which is required by Stellantis PSA, was not found implemented. Consequently, you walk away with a non-conformity. So, and you can see for yourself, systemic audit findings addressed, rating which violated clause addressed, and then also and really put an emphasis on the formulation of the objective evidence. That helps the auditee the most and the best to go back and reconstruct and go there and see the case for himself. PPAP, yeah, putting to clear reference again, what OEM requirement that was, what exactly was the shortfall during the course of the audit, and then take it.
Hans, this all seems very plausible and feasible to me, but it's just, there's so many CSRs, so many are similar, almost the same, but different. Like, how on earth do organizations keep on top of this? How do they find the information in the first place? How do they roll it out? It must be a huge.
Karen, and this is why I rate my buddy Andras in here now. I was using this matrix, people, and mark my words, hear me out. With this matrix that I showed you, I just took this to demonstrate the concept behind how that incorporation into the scope works. In actual reality, you must put this Excel sheet to bed once and for all, because it's going to drive you crazy. If you don't have a database, if you don't have a BPM support, the business modeling process where you can introduce the CSRs into the process, you will be buggered. You will be buggered. It's not to manage. It's not to handle. We tried every possible way and angle. It's not going to fly. So I'm really using this matrix here just to show you the concept, what it means to integrate it in the scope. But I think this is about time to rail Andras in to maybe he's going to show you a BPM approach that really works very well. And that's why we're also partnering in that area, where we are also a partner to QFD when it comes. And we really offer that out in the market. It works well. And but cut the story short. Andras, can you take over from here and show the crowd real quick how Smanage BPM software works with the BPM and process modeling and integration of CSR?
Sure. Thank you, Hans. Regarding to this topic, CSRs and processing CSRs, Hans told you all the possible problems Once you could have problem with your customers, you could have problems with the certification auditors. But finally, and this is actually the most important point, why you need a structured process to manage customer specific requirements, because it costs money. Because every requirement what you don't agree with the customer or you don't negotiate with the customer will cause money sooner or later. And waste. Well, I can share my screen and then I show you how we worked on this topic. Okay, so now you should see the Smanage application. And first, okay, English is set. You could choose other languages as well, but English will be okay. Important is that this is a demo system. So we use it for presentation purposes, trainings and so on. And there are some obsolete CSRs in the system and so on, but not the point now. So we go in. Very short where the development of this software started. Me and my colleagues working as auditors and visited really hundreds of companies, and we found that this CSR management is always a mess. Actually, it's unbelievable. If you have more customers, more OEMs, and now in the last years, more and more tier one suppliers have also customer specific requirements. So if you have more customers, then it could be really problematic. When we started to work on the CSR problematic, we recognize that, of course, if you want to solve this CSR problematic, you have to work also on this process map and so on. And that's why finally we made a bit more than just the management of the CSRs. Because if you want to link your CSRs to your processes, of course, you have to have a process map. But if you have a process map, you have to go in details and you have to analyze your processes. What you see here, this is actually a demo company and one site. You could manage here five different sites. This is the headquarter. You have the process map here, the management processes, the core or customer-oriented processes, and the support processes. Within the process, you can make also the process analysis according to the turtle model. Everyone knows the turtles. You can link also process descriptions and such things. You can also prepare here the management, the quality management manual as required by the standard. The risk management module allows you to do the SWOT analysis on the company level. But you can go also onto the process level where you can review the risks and opportunities within the processes. Then there is a comprehensive competence management module from the human resource job profile or necessary human resources with job profiles to a complete training planning with budget management. And finally, last but not at least, the topic what we are here today is the customer specific requirements, the CSR management module. Well, the logic is actually that you have to identify the relevant customer specific requirements, and you should do it in the very early phase, in the RFQ phase, because you have to agree about it and you have to plan with those costs. And there are some really cost-intensive requirements, like, for example, the frequency of the requalification, the layout inspection and functional testing and so on. So you have to identify the customer-specific requirements, and you have to review them. And if it is possible, agree with your customers. Sometimes there are some room for negotiations. And then you have to approve and process within the organization. So what we did here, actually, that you can process all of your customer specifics in this system. There are a lot because this is a presentation demo software what you see now, and you can add here the new requirements. You can process them by customer. You can choose, if you choose a customer, you can choose also, I think there is some for General Motors, for example, then you can choose the specification, itself, issue date, and so on, and so on, and so on. And you can also link with your processes. I just go back. And then you can search here. You can search in all the process customer-specific requirements by customer, or, for example, let's take BMW. You can search by customer, but you can also search by connected processes. If you want to see, okay, what relevant requirements exist for internal audits, then you just search for internal audits, and there you see all relevant customer specific requirements by customers. So this is one way how you can get to those customer specific requirements. Another way is the CSR matrix itself, what was just explained by Hans, where you see your operational processes or your company processes within your QMS, and then you see all your customers here as well on the other axle. And then you see what customer has requirements to the different processes. For example, let's go here. This is the VW column. Yes, that's Volkswagen AG. Let's go down. What has Volkswagen AG for non-conformity management? This organization has a process called non-conformity management. And then you see there are three different requirements. Just click on it, and then you see the requirement itself. That's actually the way you could also make here translations if on different locations people use different languages. Normally we use here the original language. The VW published now the CSRs in German and also in English. And you can also link the document. It is really necessary if there is any special agreement with the customer, because then in the case of any situation with the customer or with certification audit and so on, you directly can reach those signed agreements and so on. So this was one way, but the very important point, since all these requirements are linked with the processes, if you are, for example, an internal auditor, or if you are the process owner for internal audits, the only thing what you need to do, just go to your process internal audits, and then you can go directly to the related custom specific requirements from here. And if we click on that, you go to the same surface where you can see all the customer specifics related to your process. So actually, this is the logic behind. As I said, important is identification of customer specifics. This should be done, of course, by the sales department. Then review of the customer specific requirements. And this is a tricky question. Hans told it shouldn't be only a quality department which reviews all these requirements. And of course, in this example, for example, let's go out, because we are in the internal audits quality department, most probably can work with that. But if we have a look on, for example, in purchasing, who else could review the purchasing related customer specifics if not the purchasing manager or the process owner for purchasing? So identification by sales, review by the process owners, and then they can actually decide, yes, we can do that, or we want to do that, or we cannot do that, or we don't want to do that, and so on. And if there is an agreement, of course, if you have room for any discussion and agreement with the customer, sometimes you don't have any. If there is an agreement, then you can publish all these requirements. You can accept them, sign them, publish them, and then all these requirements will be available in the system in a structured way with the required matrix. Easy access to the single requirements and the content of the single requirements and also easy access from the process map. So the only thing what the employees need to know in which process they are working. If I am in the laboratory and responsible for the measuring devices, I just need to click on my process and I see I can reach everything. Actually, we are speaking now about the customer specific requirements, but here you can also link the process descriptions and so on. And let's have a look. Ford has requirements here for measuring devices. Volkswagen has requirements for measuring devices and so on. Hans also said that it is important to audit these customer specific requirements. And one thing is how you plan it, how you can add to your audit plan when and which customer specific requirements will be audited. But another thing is to have a look on those requirements. And what you can do, it's managed works also on the mobile. And you just take your cell phone, you just search for the process, for example, purchasing what we just spoke about, or you search for a customer and then the process, and you can have a look what is the exact requirement, and then you can evaluate in an audit situation if that requirement is met or not. Well, this is actually the basic process and the logic in the system, in the software. Well, Hans, you know the software as well. Do you have any other comments or any questions what I could explain?
No, Andras, as usual, you're always comprehensive, complete, and to the dot. I just want to reinforce what Andras just said and what I said earlier as well. The use of BP software, BPM software, of business process modeling. We are really in a stage where we talk about digital age trends and Industry 4.0, and we still believe that we can manage the complexity of processes with a stack of 50 turtle diagrams. We must be out of our minds. So it's time to really get software use in place. You can do this in software, but then you just click through and it brings you further. With a paper, it's just too complex out there, and it will be very difficult. So have a look at this. Taryn, I think you will be receiving all the requests if somebody wants to have more information about Smanage.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to comment also.
So we can channel it then with Andras. Yeah.
Yeah. We've already had a question asking for the pricing model and that. So if anybody would like information, please go ahead and contact me on marketing@encona.org and I'll put you in touch.
Cool.
Awesome. So there's actually a question directly related to usability on Smanage. Is there a way to upload information already saved in Excel into the system instead of putting all the information in manually again?
Actually, no. The answer is no. You have to process it again. And there is a logic behind, because you have gone through this process. What I said, the approval process and so on, and the publication process, the linking with the processes and so on. And of, since you have to define first your process map, that's why you cannot just import such data into the system. There is a way how to do that. Create your process map and then add your customer specifics. What we do, and of course Encona can do as well, that sometimes we do it for organizations. So if they have a lack of resources or sometimes also lack of understanding, then we can help in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to just confirm, I'm moving on to Q&A now. Thank you very much, Hans, for your detailed presentation, and Andras for the demo. It's quite a few questions coming through. I just want to start before I miss this one. Johannes, you raised your hand. Did you want me to unmute you so you could ask a question? Hi, Johannes, just speak up if you did want to ask a question.
He's on mute.
No, he's unmuted now. Oh, it just went dark here. Good old load shedding. Please let me I forgot to check the load shedding schedule. Frankly, I'm so used to the lights being out that I actually like to live on the edge these days. Not the schedule. Who knows? Okay, Johannes, give us a shout if you did want to bring a question up there with the Q&A. Can Power BI be used to create a matrix for CSRs? I would think so.
Power BI is definitely a good solution to bring into, simply because it can drag information from multiple different sources into. So yes, definitely Power BI would be a solution.
Awesome. A question from Alexandra. This came up quite close to the beginning. What would you say on how to treat the situation where we have VW CSRs that are group CSRs? And then you've got the different brands, for example, Scania, Porsche, Audi, et cetera, with their own CSRs. Do the brand CSRs overrule the group ones? We apply or assess VW CSRs because that is on a group level and released or valid within the IATF webpage, or should you do both?
Definitely not both. Definitely both. And it depends on who you ask. It's interesting. That's an interesting question because we just discussed it before I came to Europe. I was in a workshop with Volkswagen exactly about that. So, Alexandra, that's a smart question. Generally, if you ask Volkswagen, they will say that the Volkswagen requirements are applicable for the whole group, period. Period. But as long as we have the situation, and you're referring to Porsche, I can tell you, Porsche and Volkswagen, they're probably never going to celebrate Christmas together. And consequently, they are always bringing through their PHE requirements. Technically, they belong to the group and Formula Q applies, right? But definitely not both. What you should do in practical terms is at the start of the project, okay, this is where you need to get your business units in. You have to sit down, contract review, all these requirements you have. You have to make a clear negotiation as to which CSRs apply. So never go both of them. But Volkswagen will will struggle to do that because technically Volkswagen overrules the brand CSRs. Mm. Tell us again and again and again at Volkswagen. So beginning of the start, when you do the PPA agreements, according to VDA 2, this is where you can fire it up and make it clear as to which CSRs apply. Okay. And but that's a difficult situation. Technically, the group overrules is applicable for every car brand within both.
Yeah.
What else do we have?
Sorry, just finding my place there. I did get a question from Johannes. So, as auditors, should we schedule specific audits to address only CSRs for each customer in order to satisfy the requirements?
No, clearly not, because you want to audit the system and how the CSRs are actually incorporated in your system. So please don't segregate that. Okay. So you want to see. You want to go into your standard system and see how the CSR applied in there. So don't separate that. Just incorporate that in your system audits and process.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had another one. It's less of a question, a comment from Brian earlier. Don't you agree that suppliers, unfortunately, just do not have the manpower and understanding of all the CSRs? So this makes the matrix fairly difficult to consolidate the information.
What's the question? Would I agree? Yes, I would agree. That's the situation that we see out there. But the solution is also clear. Reading books is allowed, Brian. Reading books is allowed. So there's not really a rocket science in CSRs. You just need to read them. And everybody that I can encourage is just to read the books and understand for yourself what's behind that. What is more complicated, what is more difficult is the capacity. Yeah, do we have the resources in SME areas, in the small and medium enterprises? That is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
The corporate world, lesser, but also, yeah. But ITF also caters for that, where it says that top management is responsible to provide sufficient resources to drive effective management systems. So challenge your managers. I got no solution for that. It has nothing to do with auditing. But yes, I do agree, Brian. We do see that resources and the shortage of resources does a lot of damage in that area. In general, it just burns people right now. We see that. Yeah. But I want to connect that what Andras earlier said. Not applying can potentially cost the organization a lot of money. Traditionally, a lot more than resources.
Yeah, but
you burn it anyway. You burn it in your prevention and save in the failure costs, or you just pay the bill later. Doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. The question is today for managers, guys, is that we always ask how much does it cost to do it. But the right question today, folks, is what are the costs of not doing it?
Yeah,
that's the real question. Because you're going to pay the bill in any case, just later. You always ask. So rather fire it up in the preventative costs rather than spending it in your failure costs.
Mm-hmm. And it's like we've often repeated on a number of these webinars, don't make things also just a box ticking exercise. Use them for their benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the final word.
a question from Halima. So to confirm, is there a requirement to have all CSRs 100% covered during the QMS and manufacturing process audits in the 3-year period?
Sorry, do they have to be addressed in a 3-year period or having incorporate in the system?
Can you say addressed that? To have addressed 100% of CSRs.
technically that requirement exists, but it's virtually impossible. So you have to reduce to the max. Okay, you have to reduce to the max. It depends on how many OEMs you're really dealing with. Technically, the requirement stands. You have to verify the requirements of this international standard and the CSR within 3 years. So technically you have to address them in a 3-year cycle, but that's very challenging. That's nearly impossible depending on how many clients you're actually dealing with. But you have to be clever and practical, you know, because if the OEMs come, they always raise the same question, the same as CSRs. In any case, that's the bare minimum that you should do. And the rest to bring them in the next audits and next audits is your continuous improvement. So the bare minimum that the OEMs always ask, they should be addressed all the time, plus continuous improvement, rail more and more.
Mm-hmm. I think it leads on to nicely onto this question from Erica. Could you clarify the difference between customer-specific requirements and customer requirements? example.
Now that Erica is asking that question, it struck me like a flash because Andras told me yesterday in the briefing meeting, I said, don't you want to clarify this?
Mm-hmm.
I agreed, but somehow I failed to do that in the presentation. But now that Erica is asking this question, Andras, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, you did warn me yesterday already. I will work this in the presentation. The answer is the following. Everything that is stated as a customer requirements are going three different areas. One are related to the product, which are specifications, drawings, CAD files, right? Then the second portion is also customer requirement is related to the process. And that's your TLs and from Volkswagen, your process requirements. And the third one is the requirements, also customer requirements that are dedicated to the quality management system and ITF. So whenever you talk about a CSR, you know it's related to the ITF and your quality management system. It has nothing to do with a drawing. A drawing is not a CSR. A CAD file is not a CSR. A TL process requirement during serial life is not a CSR. The CSRs are related to ITF and your quality management system only. Only okay. Are the CSR.
Okay, perfect. So Niels mentioned that for me, the trick is actually keeping abreast of the changes. So
is that our Niels?
No, Neil.
Neil.
I think it's our Neil Smith, though, not Niels Smith.
Okay.
For me, the trick is keeping abreast of all those changes the OEMs make. Any ideas in staying ahead of this?
Interesting enough, the CSRs don't change so often, to be frank. Not so often. When they change, they come with a big bang, like you had in the last Formula Q capability and concrete from Volkswagen. That's becoming a real monster now. But generally, yeah, to keeping that updated in general is a challenge.
And where OEMs make changes within the CRMs and don't tell you?
On OEM level, all the suppliers have access to a portal where they can all download them.
Okay.
So if they not automatically notify you, that we sometimes hear, you should be working with the portal regularly anyway in various different areas of the organization. And the news about new CSRs is actually going viral very quickly. So one would pick that up. But usually they're downloadable on the portal and also on the IRTF, on the IRTF globaloversight.org, you can also download CSRs from various different OEMs.
Brilliant. Thank you. Jacob asked, they said the Smanage seems like a very good tool, Andras. Does the tool allow you to make scores and to score any?
No. It's not included, I would say, yet. The development is an ongoing process. We plan new modules. If anyone has any good ideas, we review and if possible we implement. So.
Awesome. This is a longish question from Jacob. I hope I read it okay so it comes out clearly. Do you suggest to split the production processes to satisfy two or more customers, or is it possible to unify them? Many times it happens when you have a first part release for suppliers, really A2 or PPAP, and their release processes establish a change in inspection points. That's why many companies I have observed that the quick way is to have two separate processes, but you lose plant space and maintenance time for equipment. So the very first part of the question, do you suggest splitting production processes to satisfy two or more customers, or is it possible to unify them?
Well, it depends what you are auditing. If you're auditing a system, the regulations are quite different to a process audit, at least when we talk about VDA 6.3, that's where you have to focus on particular product family or products of one customer in any case. So yeah, that's where it's definitely advisable and the right way. In the system audit, I would not suggest that because you might be in violation of the actual audit requirement because you need to take sample sizes. And that's typically what you do from different processes and customers and samples that you're taking. I didn't quite get the connection to VDA 2 with suppliers, but generally to split makes sense in process audits, system audits, I would not vouch for that.
Thank you. Hope we answered what you were hoping for there, Jacob.
But it's an interesting one. So maybe if you stay connected with Jacob and we take this offline, I'm more than happy to make myself available to discuss this in a different forum.
Give me 1 second as I copy paste before, so I'm sure I saved it before I go and close this webinar. Perfect. Jacob's always got questions for us. He joins pretty much every webinar.
Oh, he's a well-known one then.
Yeah. From Brian again, to what level do we go down? This is an interesting one to me. Do we go down in the supply chain in determining that CSRs have been implemented? And does the product that is being supplied determine how far down we should look in the system?
Well, technically, every organization that carries an ITF certificate is responsible to implement CSRs. So you're not necessarily responsible to go all the way down into the latest corner of your supply chain. But if you do conduct supplier audits, then it makes huge sense to of course, look into this. And VDA 6.3 caters for that. Specifically in chapter P5, as you probably all well know, to really understand how they deal with their suppliers. Okay. But technically the same requirement applies for every organization wherever in the supply chain they are. But when you do supplier audits, it's worth the while to have a look into this, how they cascade customer-specific requirements down in their supply chain. That's that's not only advisable, that's a requirement when doing process audits at the suppliers.
Isn't that even a base ISO 9001 requirement?
9001? Yeah. 9001 does not specifically talk about customer-specific requirements. It talks about customer satisfaction, talks about requirements, but CSRs in the terminology as ITF 9001 doesn't care. No.
Yes, sorry. I meant the supplier cascading element, I believe. But anyway, I think this might be the last question for today. If an OEM introduces a new CSR, for example, new product audit frequency, is it mandatory to implement on existing products already in production before the CSR was released?
Is it when the update comes? Read this again, please.
When an update comes, for example, yeah. Updated frequency for new product audits. Is it mandatory to implement that updated CSR on existing products already in production before the CSR was even released?
B- before the CSR was released and conducted. And the question is, do they have to implement the new update on
existing products?
On existing products. Yeah, that's not only related to those product audits. That's generally the question, guys, where the debate, when a new CSR update comes in, as of when is it valid? We always have that. And we just had this with Daimler, with the MBSD 2020. And version, the 2016, was in place. And the project was started already, and the CSR came late, and I said, no, we started the project with 2016. But in all realities, that is programmed for a fight if it's not clearly identified at the beginning of the project. And you have all the tools in place according to IATF, including contract reviews, including PPA agreements now to in MLA, in the RGA approach at the beginning of the project. These are the things that need to be addressed, negotiated, and set down. Elsewise, the customer will always say it's automatically valid. And then what you should also do is to look into your contracts with the business units, what they clearly stipulate and what references they made to the CSR. Elsewise, you're not going to get rid of this discussion. It's going on and on and on and on. That needs to be clarified at the beginning of the project. But if you don't put a revision date in place, then of course the OEM comes for you and said, now this is the latest update, now please apply.
Yeah.
You have a clear reference to what revision date you're starting the project, then there is next to no discussion, unless you allow it. So
basically it's a minefield unless it's managed properly from the beginning.
Yeah, but you do a project, you're in a mutual agreement at the beginning before we start working together. That is business. That is business ethics.
Yeah.
And what we fail to clearly negotiate and bring down to the papers and agreements is always room for a discussion at a later stage. And then usually the OEM always likes to win. Simple.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. No surprise, we went over again. Andreas, I trust you. You're still going to make your flight there.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity. And yeah, if there is any question, you can direct to Infona. They know everything. If they don't, and they can ask me. So that would be the way.
Perfect. Yes. Any queries?
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Andres. Any queries at all, please feel free to send to me. I certainly don't know everything, but I can link you with the people who do have the answers. Following up from this, I just want to give a word out as the year starts drawing to a close from the Inkona family. Thank you to everybody supporting us, joining these webinars, reading our blogs. We hope you find them informative and useful. In the new year, I will certainly be releasing a calendar for next year. Like I told you, I need to keep Hans out of trouble and keep him busy. So I'm going to get him to commit. But in the short term, within this week, I will share the recording, the slides, etc. from today, and it'll also be available on our podcast. I will email everybody who has joined today. Thank you very much. Thank you again, Andras. Thank you, Hans.
Yeah, thanks to all of you, and goodbye.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Bye.
Ciao.